We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 26, verses 24 to 26. And today's verse is, therefore one should never let his senses associate freely with women or with men attached to women. Even those who are highly learned cannot trust the six enemies of the mind. What to speak then of foolish persons like me? So, this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, this story of Pururava in his association with Urvashi, most beautiful damsel from the heavenly planets. And we've heard how Maharaj Pururava was completely bewildered and put himself in a very embarrassing situation, that when she left he was lamenting, and even though he was naked he was running after her, calling out in great stress, great anxiety. So and then he was lamenting that I am supposed to be a great lord within the universe, but my condition, being bewildered by attachment to material enjoyment, which the epitome or the symbol of material enjoyment in the material world is sex life, and that he was thinking that I'm thinking that I am in such a powerful, prestigious position, but actually I've been behaving like a completely ignorant fool. So that this is the prayers of Maharaj Pururava. Ultimately, because of transcendental knowledge, he gave up that illusion. And he's saying here that just as his intelligence was cheated, that therefore one should not very easily, or not trust at all, the mind. Even those who are actually very learned, he says, even if one is very learned, they should not trust the six enemies of the mind. One should not trust the mind, especially if the mind is controlled, if the mind is serving its enemies. Actually, these qualities here, lust, anger, greed, bewilderment, intoxication and envy, which is the very platform of enjoyment for the materialist, right? They love all these things. They like to be lusty. They like to be greedy and angry. They actually even enjoy being bewildered and intoxicated. And they also get satisfaction from the envy. So, although these are enemies of the mind, they take them as the friends. And a person who is very learned, highly learned, that person should still be very cautious if there's any sign that the mind has become a servant of these six enemies. One has to be very cautious. One should never think, they look friendly enough to me. Lust, anger, greed, they look inviting enough. What trouble could I get in? What what harm could there be? So, but one should be very cautious. One should not trust these enemies. So then he goes on to describe that, actually Krishna then summarizing that, therefore Maharaj Pururava, his illusion was cleansed, but then he come to his senses again and realized that I'm serving the mind, which is controlled by lust, anger, greed, envy. And then he understood that that is the platform of illusion. That's not the platform of happiness. He understood that. It's illusion to think that that platform is happiness. And then gradually Pura Rava come to understand the real platform of happiness is to contact the Supreme Lord who sits within the heart of every living being. And of course that position is attained by association of devotees. Therefore he's saying, give up the bad association and take the association of devotees, which can take you to that, as we sing in the morning, to Srila Prabhupada, Uttama Gati. Uttama, the transcendental position or the position. Tama is darkness or ignorance. Uttama, beyond darkness. That goal, that is the goal achieved. So we sing that to Srila Prabhupada, that by the association of devotees, we achieve Uttama Gati, the supreme goal beyond darkness, Krishna Prapti, that the pure devotees can give us Krishna. And the devotees, it describes here, how do they do that? Their words are like an axe. They chop. They cut the excessive attachment of one's mind. Without our attachment in material life can be compared to ropes, several ropes, three ropes, tamas, rajas, sattva, material energy, intertwined, braided together, makes them very strong. And we are very tightly bound by these ropes. Tightly bound by the hands, the legs, and all our senses, actually. So in that sense, we're blindfolded. So we cannot see anything except beyond our the material covering. Our ears are taped up, our mouth is taped up, we cannot hear anything spiritual, we cannot speak anything spiritual, our legs, everything is tied and bound. And we have no access at all of engaging our senses in a transcendental way. The sadhu, sadhu means one who cuts, their strong words, they cut this attachment. Actually, that is the duty of the sadhu. We see that Vidura, when he was delivering his brother, Dhritarashtra, that he had to speak, very strong words. Think you're living like a king, this is somehow the platform of enjoyment. Because everyone thinks they're the king. All the men think they're the king. The Supreme Lord, I am the Lord, I am the Master. And the men think like that. And the women, they think that they are the queen. They are also like a master. And no one in the material world, no one is hankering to be the servant. If you ask anyone their plans, that I will do this, this, and this, and in this way, I will become in this position where I am, the master of my home and within my business and my family. So everyone, all their plans are coming to this position of being the master. If you ask anyone, you won't find anyone saying, yes, my goal, I want to be the servant. No one would speak like that. Actually, although that's everyone's position, Dhritarashtra also, he's saying, yes, I am the king, I am the master. And Vidura is pointing out, no, you actually, you're living in a very wretched condition. you're very, very old, you know, your body is deteriorating, you know, by the minute. There's no question that such an aged and blind person like you can actually enjoy in the material world. And what to speak of that, you're living from the handouts given by Bhima, who's the very person that killed your, you know, two dearest sons. And now you're living, taking charity from him. So in this way, very strong words. And then he understood, yes, you know, you have cut through my attachments. Without those strong words from Vidura, Dhritarashtra would have gone to the very end of life in the same embarrassing situation. Vidura said, you're living like a dog. You know, that was his position. No one likes to think that. No one likes to think, oh, I'm, you know, everyone's thinking, you know, I am the master. No one likes to hear, oh, I'm living like a dog. And we don't take that as a compliment. Oh, yes, very nice, thank you. What sort of dog? Yeah. So, but actually, unless the sadhu points out that you're living like a dog, no one will think of themselves in that way. Although so many people live like that. We see that how many species of life there are. We see that the pigs, they're eating stool. Now, only because they've forgotten their previous existence, perhaps as a demigod or a great king or queen of this world, that they can eat that stool every day, mixed with a bit of mud. If they could remember, in my previous life I was like King Pururava, or this one and that one, enjoying heavenly delights, drinking soma rasa, if they could remember that, they could barely get through the day eating that stool. Because they've been so covered, then they can accept, yes, I am happy, very happy as a pig, eating stool like this. So similarly, actually all of us, you know, we have forgotten our original spiritual existence in the spiritual world, a life of eternity, a life of knowledge, a life of full bliss. We've completely forgotten. Therefore, we take a little bit of sex life, a little bit of, you know, sense gratification in the material world, even though compared to our existence in the spiritual world, we're living like dogs or less, we think, oh yes, I'm very happy. But unless the sadhus, you know, point this out, then we just go on the same way, day after day. So that is a duty, that is a duty. And actually this is the purpose of ISKCON, International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Hare Krishna. So, and you know, all of the festival, actually everything the devotees do in the Hare Krishna temple is meant to gradually help people who are suffering in the material world, who think that they're happy, feeling very compassionate upon them, to somehow or another break that illusion, cut through that illusion, and help them to see their eternal spiritual identity. That is the whole purpose of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, to so that devotee people can come and they can, instead of always associating with bad association, they can actually have good association of devotees. And the devotees, they perform their duty to remove that illusion. Of course, you know, sadhus or devotees, they have to become very expert at doing that. We see that, you know, Srila Prabhupada was very expert, and all the acharyas were very expert, you know, in order to, as we said, you know, it's not that people come to the temple and we say, the sinners, hi, you know, my name's so and so, what's your name? Yes, you know, do you know that you're living like a dog? You're practically on the level of an animal, and you know, you should give up everything like this and become Tam Hare Krishna. If we did that, of course, you know, no one would come. So, you know, these devotees have to be very careful. They have to achieve the goal. They have to cut through the illusion of material existence. But they have to, you know, be very gentle. Just like a surgeon, you know, a surgeon, their knife is very, very sharp, you know, the scalpel. And because it is very, very sharp, it can cause, within a second, they can accidentally kill the patient, and sometimes that happens. A little negligence, they can actually kill the patient. They had to be very, very, and they're also dealing, you know, they open up a patient and they begin cutting within, you know, somewhere within the heart region, or, you know, they have to understand they're dealing in a very sensitive area. So very, very carefully, very, very carefully, they get the job done, but therefore they have to be trained. Although if someone is ill, someone has to help cure that person. And sometimes that involves an operation, especially modern Western. But that cannot be done by anyone. That has to be done by someone who's trained to use the scalpel very carefully. So in the same way, it's not that anyone can actually preach Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada has actually said that on several occasions. Certain devotees who... Prabhupada wanted everyone to preach. But on certain occasions, Srila Prabhupada pointed out that one should stay within one's limit. And just because Prabhupada is asking everyone to preach, he's not saying preach and you know, have no regard for the process or the training methods. And Prabhupada doesn't say that. Yes, everyone should preach, but don't consider that there may be an authorized way to do it, and that one may have to be trained in that authorized. He never says that. So if one is not trained and one is not properly authorized, then sometimes their preaching capacity may be restrained temporarily by the spiritual master, the spiritual authorities, until such training is there, because preaching has to be done very, very carefully. Today is a very interesting example that, you know, there were many, hopefully hundreds of people who would come to the Hare Krishna temple. And they would come for all sorts of reasons, you know. It's very rare that pure devotees will come just to pray to Krishna on this auspicious day. You know, I have no desire for followers, for wealth, for women. You know, birth after birth, let me engage in your service, Sri Krishna. I'm prepared to leave everything and give up everything right now on the spot and just surrender to you fully. It's very, you know, very few people will come to the temple in that mood. Mostly, a lot will come who worship Kali. Today is also the Kali Puja. So many, many people will come to worship. It's part of their philosophy, because part of, as we said, everyone thinks they are the master, everyone thinks they are the guru. The guru is a very nice position for people to want to have, because they seem to be the master in control of so many servants. Everyone wants to be the guru. No one wants to be the disciple. So if you ask these days, in Kali Yuga, if you ask everyone, they'll present, because they are their own guru, they all have their own philosophy. They are too elevated to, in knowledge, as they think, to accept instruction from someone else, because then that would make them the servant and the disciple. Many people feel that Krishna, when he comes to this material world, he is actually a manifestation, a material manifestation of the mode of goodness. Many people do not accept that Krishna is transcendental, what to speak of the supreme personality of Godhead, the origin of all. Many philosophers persons, and even persons who read the Bhagavad Gita, and they also think that of Rama. They think that of many of the incarnations, that they're manifestations of the material mode of goodness. So that, and that therefore, the controlling factor of all those different manifestations is actually Durga. So Durga would be higher. And Durga, her husband is Shiva. And when, if one wants material benefits, one can worship Durga or any of her expansions such as Krishna, Rama, like this, you know, Nrisimha. To many, these are all material manifestations of Durga, who is the supreme. And therefore, they feel that by worshipping Durga, in order to please Durga, sometimes they may come to the Hare Krishna temple and offer some flowers to Krishna, and in this way, they're pleasing Durga. So many different strange philosophies. Or if they want to come to the transcendental position, they believe that Shiva is supreme. It's like yesterday I was speaking to some people at a home program, and I mentioned Om. And the lady said, "Oh yes, Om, that is Shiva." What? No. Anyway, I tried to explain a little bit. I could see there was a curtain of Maya there. And nothing was getting in. But people have different. Everyone has different philosophies, which are where they've been cheated by their intelligence, by their material intelligence. Some people today they worship Lakshmi. Even as devotees, today is a day to worship Lakshmi. Of course, we worship Lakshmi Devi. Lakshmi, worship of Lakshmi is part of the Kartika Vrata in the books by Sanatana Goswami, because we worship Lakshmi in her relationship with Lord Narayan, just as we worship, you know, Lakshmi manifests as expands as Sita. Mahalakshmi, she appears as Rukmini, and that same person who is Rukmini appears as Sita. There's Lakshmi, Mahalakshmi. We always worship Lakshmi as the energy, the spiritual energy of the Supreme Lord. And we understand that we please Lakshmi by always serving her by engaging everything in the service of Krishna. So money is a manifestation of Lakshmi. So if a devotee gets money, they give it to Krishna and Lakshmi becomes pleased. If we take money and try and take it away from Krishna and for our sense gratification, that is like the Ravana mentality of trying to take Sita from Ravana. But materialistic persons, they want to worship Lakshmi to get some material favour, So many people will come and they want to worship Lakshmi and get the blessings, and they want all the opulences given by Lakshmi, which is nice husband, nice wife, very beautiful, very handsome, lots of money, lots of opulence, a good job, nice clothes, good education for the children. These are all opulences given by Lakshmi. We were discussing a couple of weeks ago, 21 days ago, on Ram Vijayatsava. I don't know if anyone was here. We were asking the question, what do we celebrate? Ram Vijayatsava is the in the waxing moon, waxing fortnight, and of the Dasami. And we were asking the devotees what they're celebrating, and no one could actually say for certainty what it meant. Actually, I was looking it up in the Ramayana. I found I have a very old copy of the Ramayana, because the ones that we have are very, you know, edited. So some of the little details are not there. So I had a very nice old edition. It was an edition that early in the movement, devotees would ask, you know, which edition of the Ramayana can we read, because we didn't have our own. And the senior devotees would say, you could read this edition because, you know, evidently Prabhupada said it was okay. So, you know, this is the edition that I'm reading. And on the Ram Vijayatsava, generally we celebrate Ram's victory over Ravana. And so generally, if you ask someone what happened, yes, Ram's. Although, you know, for many Hindus, they're worshipping Durga, you know, at that time, some other thing. But actually, in the Ramayana, what happened on that day, Ram Vijayatsava, was that Hanuman had found Sita, returned to Lord Ramchandra, and said to him, I have found Sita, she's, you know, on the island of Lanka, and we know who's taken her, Ravana. We know where Ravana is, he is there. And therefore, Lord Ramchandra, he said, let us begin now. So this is the beginning of the war, not the end of the wars. You know, this is the beginning. There was a little celebration because Lord Ram, he said, on this day, the sun is now directly above, which means it's called Vijaya. There was certain indications within his body and other auspicious omens, and he understood that if we prepare for war now, we leave now for war, march to war, we would definitely be victorious. Ravana is good as dead. So they celebrated the victory of Ravana before he was killed, because all the auspicious signs show that is the actual festival. So we're celebrating that Ram killing Ravana, but it didn't happen on that day. It actually happened today. And again, reading, you know, from the Ramayana, today we celebrate Ram's return to Ayodhya, but actually in the Ramayana he didn't return until 5 days later, which is on the Panchami, and that was when his coronation was. On this day, Ravana was actually killed on the Amavasya. This is according to, you know, the Ramayana. So, but we still celebrate. The celebration is correct. In both, you know, we're celebrating the right thing on the days. It's just today we celebrate Ram's return to Ayodhya. So that celebration is correct. It's, you know, perhaps not correct to think that the event literally happened on this day. That's all. It's not that we're celebrating the wrong thing. It's just that Ram returned on the Panchami 5 days later. The statements, you know. You see, when you read the unedited Ramayana, it tells you the tithis and the, you know, the nakshatras and so many things, so you can get a better picture. Ram actually stayed one night on the fourth day after today. He stayed with the spiritual master or spiritual teacher Bharadvaj, I think it was, and then Bharadvaj, Bharad actually came to see him, and Ram said, someone came to see him anyway. Word somehow or another was given to Bharat. I can't remember if they actually met, but that Bharat should make preparations. The Ram would stay one night, and that was definitely the fourth day after Amavasya. And the next day he would return, and there was a coronation. So those things are there. So today, devotees enter into that mood. They're not so much interested in the Kali Puja, or they may worship Lakshmi. That's in relationship with Lord Vishnu or Narayan, or Sita and Ram, but not independently. But devotees actually try to rid from their heart the Ravana mentality. And that's what these verses are describing. The Ravana mentality is this lust, greed, envy, intoxication, illusion. That mentality which sits in our heart, we want Lord Ram to sit within our heart, and with the strong bow of his love for us, to shoot and destroy those qualities that are there within the heart. That's what the devotees are meditating on this day. They want that darkness within the heart to be destroyed by the mercy of the Lord. They're not coming to the temple to pray to Kali to make them qualities expand unlimitedly. It is a whole different mentality. The devotees who properly taken shelter, devotees who actually want to go back to the spiritual world, who actually follows the Srila Prabhupada, follows the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, these festivals, we're meditating in one way to remove the ignorance, to remove the lust and the greed and all these, and the anger, all these things from our heart. But many of the people that come to the temple as visitors, their hearts are filled with these things, and they have very little understanding that these qualities, if they maintain or expand these qualities in their heart, they can never progress in spiritual life, and they will always remain in the illusion that yes, I am enjoying in the material world. So the devotees try to very expertly take the opportunity to speak to them transcendental knowledge, and to following the process given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to let them chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, to take prasadam, and to hear the real philosophy. Let their, let the illusions be cut a little bit by hearing real knowledge. If they can hear real knowledge from a devotee, how things actually are, then although they're coming for a different purpose, when they leave, there may be just a few cuts in that strong, those ropes of attachment. The beginning of untying the knots of material existence. But that can only be done by the method given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the main thing that people should learn from us is that they should actually become devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The main thing, that his foremost representative who's the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are represented by Srila Prabhupada's books. For the next 10,000 years, in this era of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that message, people, when people come to the temple, if they can leave the temple and think, yes, I think I should look a little bit more into this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fellow and this Srila Prabhupada. They should have that. We should be able to excite their interest that there is something, very wonderful and transcendental. That they should have a little faith that if I can take shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and through the disciplic succession, there's some real spiritual benefit there. That's what people should. Not that we should take association in such a way that we give up our principles and adopt theirs. That and that's what I was saying a few weeks ago, that I sort of noticed a little bit that sometimes some of the festivalist devotees are not sure what they're doing. They just adopt a Hindu conception or process. It may not necessarily be correct. It may be passed down through tradition. And not just Hindu. Sometimes devotees adopt things from other religions, or just even materialists. They adopt materialistic conceptions. Sometimes devotees are learning things in universities, and I've seen devotees, good devotees, and next thing they're one disciple of Srila Prabhupada, and going to university, and then learning that the all the Vedas were produced 500 years ago, not 5,000 years ago, and just so much nonsense, because this is the materialistic conception. If you go to university and you ask them about the Vedas, they're not going to tell you anything similar to what we're teaching. As far as there's a completely different scenario. So therefore, devotees can, and this is the purport of this section, Purarava is saying that you can actually, Krishna was saying at the beginning, you can fall down even from the transcendental position. Having risen to the transcendental position, you can fall down from it. That's the mood of this chapter. How is that done? Being influenced by bad association. That can come in many different ways. Just like, to give some examples, to give another example. Last Sunday, I was at the... There was a lot of people come to the Sunday feast. Hundreds. There were hundreds of people here. 7 o'clock aarti, and as usual, we begin the Damodar Ashtakam. And I was, probably a little disturbed, a little concerned that there was no prayers to Prabhupada, there was no prayers to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And within a short time, the kirtan was in a frenzy of, Radhi, 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 Radhi. And I'm thinking, hold on, we've missed some of the building blocks here. Aren't we supposed to go through Prabhupada and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and before we worship Krishna like that? So I mentioned to one devotee, he's a nice devotee, considered a senior devotee. He said, "Oh no, Ganga, that's our standard here. We've done that for many years." I said, "They're not going to sing Gaura Aarti, they're not going to sing to Lord Chaitanya in his own aarti." "Oh no, we don't do that." So anyway, I did mention to him that I don't think this is correct, and he said he admitted, "Yeah, I think you may be correct," but because from, just to give you a few quotes, from Srila Prabhupada's own words. Here, of course, this is from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, 7th and 8th chapters of the, which deals specifically with how we should implement Lord Chaitanya's movement in this age of Kali. These are essential instructions. These are so much essential instructions that previously in ISKCON we used to distribute a book just on these chapters. Some may have seen. They're very, very important. Here in Adi Leela, text number 4 in the purport, chapter 8, Prabhupada says, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, so he's one of our acharyas, he teaches us first to offer respect to the Panchatattva, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, Advaita Prabhu, Gadadhar Prabhu, and Sri Vas and other devotees. We must strictly follow the principle of offering our respects to the Panchatattva as summarized in this mantra. You're right, Vrini? You got a little bug there? Yeah? You okay now? I'll just read that again. That we must strictly follow the principle of offering our respects to the Panchatattva as summarized in the mantra Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sarasvati Gaura Bhaktavrinda. Now this is how he comes to the end here. He says, at the beginning of every function in preaching, especially before chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Rama, we must chant the Panchatattva's names and offer our respect to them. To me, that's very clear. And in my earlier days as a devotee, this was strictly implemented. No one began a kirtan, no one began a temple aarti without offering prayers to Prabhupada or the full Panchatattva Maha Mantra. There's many verses here where Srila Prabhupada, you know, says the same thing again and again. And he says, you know, you must chant the full mantra. Sri Krishna, Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sarasvati, Gaura Bhaktavrinda. And not just a quick hurry, hurry ball and off we go. You know. So, you know, these are very, these are the books. They're not letters, incidental letters to a devotee which may or may not be relevant. This is the foundation of what we do as devotees. And, you know, even the Damodara Astikam. It surprises me. I know we've probably been doing it for a long time, but I'm surprised that no one offers their obeisances to Srila Prabhupada and Panchatattva before singing the Damodara Astikam. And sometimes in samatis, it's not mentioned at all because of the Damodara Astikam. There's those prayers can be sung in either tune. We sing the Damodara Astikam in two tunes, the 1-2-3 beat and the 1-2 beat. You can actually sing the prayers to Prabhupada and the Panchatattva in either of those tunes. There's no reason why they can't be sung. And then, you know. So, you know, for instance, in Guru Puja, it may be convenient to do Guru Puja after. At least they should still sing the prayers to Prabhupada and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And especially, you know, a Sunday feast festival, do we actually want to teach that there's, you know, 500 people here and we're teaching them, don't even bother with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and don't even bother with Prabhupada. You get straight into Hare Krishna and Radhi Radhi. You know? It's very. This is where, as I say, we have to be careful that we are giving association and not being gradually watered down in our activities by taking others' association. Another interesting point here, in the Nectar of Devotion, again, you know, coming from, you know, the books, we see in the introduction to the Nectar of Devotion, so it's the very beginning, so it's hard to miss it. There's not some isolated sentence somewhere at the end that no one reads. Prabhupada describes that Rupa Goswami humbly submits that he's trying to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, but that he feels unfit to do it. And therefore, he's offering the Nectar Devotion as a service, a humble service, hoping that it will please his guru and older brother, Sanatana Goswami. He never says, I am a big preacher, he has his process, I think mine is better. Or, you know, he may have his process, but I'm not interested. I am such a big devotee that by my association, my chanting and my words, everyone will be so purified. Now he says, Prabhupada said, this should be the attitude of all preachers in that same section. Never think oneself great preachers. Never. Great preachers, great kirtaniyas, like that. Never ever think like that. And we must follow this example of Rupa Goswami. And the mood, of, he says, is that we simply think that we're an instrument in the hands of the previous acharyas. That's the mood of the preacher. You know, the devotee thinks, as Prabhupada says, that if we follow in their footsteps and try to be an instrument to do what they want us to do, we may be able to do something. That's the mood of a devotee. You know, we may be able to help suffering humanity from the illusion that they're thinking they're happy in the material world. So, if we consider that we are the instrument in the hands of the previous acharyas, of which Srila Prabhupada is the Shiksha Guru of the entire ISKCON society, and he wants us to chant the Panchatattva Maha Mantra before every function, if we do not do it, can we say that we are instruments in the hands of Srila Prabhupada? We cannot say. If we are not instruments in the hands of Srila Prabhupada, can we say that we are big preachers who are, you know, helping people that come to the temple to become, you know, their illusion become destroyed? Do we have that potency by ourselves without acting as an instrument in the hands of Srila Prabhupada? We cannot do that. It's not possible. So, you know, Srila Prabhupada, you see, Srila Prabhupada's activities are very exemplary. You know, Srila Prabhupada would always just, everything he did was, you know, this is what the previous acharyas established. He never considered himself a great preacher. And he considered, I'm just the servant. And if I can be the instruments in the hands of Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, that what he wanted I will do, you know, and what he wanted is what Rupa Goswami wanted. If I can just execute their order, I'm sure I will be successful. That is Prabhupada's mood in everything he did. Therefore, you know, Prabhupada would sit and, you know, when the devotees chanted the mantras, like for Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada, just like one of the devotees in the temple, he would recite the mantras, you know, like Sri Bhagavan Avacha, he would go through like this. Not that, you know, I am above this, this is for the other, you know, these activities for the others, I am big. You know, he taught by his example. Therefore, you see that everything we're supposed to do, Srila Prabhupada did that. He rose early in the morning. You know, one could think that, you know, when you get to the Paramahamsa stage, as Srila Prabhupada, that there's actually no need to follow some of the rules and regulations. But Prabhupada knew that the spiritual masters want me to do this in order to demonstrate it to others. because if I don't do it, will my disciples follow me? Prabhupada's saying, you know, you sing the prayers of the spiritual master, the prayers of the Panchatattva before you chant Hare Krishna, and then he doesn't do it, will anyone else do it? So he always, you know, always did it. So in the same way, everything a devotee does, they, as Prabhupada says, that they, you know, they don't manufacture their own process. It's got that here somewhere. Yeah. And these quotes. So here we see that even very intelligent persons, they should be very careful of the mind. You know, even as devotees, what to speak of those who have no training as devotees. We know as devotees, you know, how tricky the mind can be, that even sometimes in the guise of devotional service, we can sometimes, you know, be wanting to be seen as a great devotee, or wanting to be seen, you know, as a big leader, or, you know, big kirtani, or a big preacher of the Bhagavatam, or a big this or a big that. There's not, you know, sometimes there's not, a devotee may not get attention. You know, if a devotee comes into the class, into the temple, and just humbly pays their obeisances, and they're in the mood that, you know, if there's something I can do, because I am such a fool, unfit, is by the mercy of the Vaishnavas, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that I have any understanding or any ability at all to serve Krishna, by their mercy, otherwise I'm completely unfit. If I can, you know, just act as an instrument in some way that pleases them, then that is my success. A devotee thinks like that, not that, you know, therefore, you know, they're not actually interested in searching out the position of being a big, big devotee. Prabhupada actually gives an interesting story, you know, in relationship to Sita Ram, that how this affects even advanced devotees. That he says that his godbrothers, this enjoying mentality, even the sannyasi is very elevated, but the mind, you know, we can't trust to see how it tricks us. He said they wanted to enjoy the property of my Guru Maharaj. You know, they gave up their preaching and fought in the courts, and no, I shall be their guru. You know, no one wanted to, you know, fight in the courts. No, I shall be the servant of the instructions of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati. They're fighting in the court. No, I will be the guru, I will be the master, and I will take control of the property. And I did. And he said that what happens, just like Ravana, when Ravana stole Sita, he didn't get Sita. If you get the blessings of Sita by actually pleasing Krishna through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, you get spiritual assets. Those spiritual assets means that you're constantly living in the realm of Vrindavan. If you think you're taking Sita, you get the Maya Sita. That's what Ravana got. And that Maya Sita, that Durga, will destroy you. And he said that my godbrothers, they got the property, just like Ravana got the Maya Sita. They got the property of my Guru Maharaj, but they couldn't get the spiritual assets, and therefore they did not have the authorization or the potency to preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. So, you know, as devotees, it's possible that we may, you know, even get fame and prestige and opulence and facility as a devotee. but we may not get the ability to serve the spiritual masters as an instrument in their hands and preach Krishna consciousness in a way that pleases them. That's the spiritual asset. We won't get that unless you know the devotees. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, "Trinada Pisana Chinata Lodi Vasishana Tamanina Manadina Kiritanya Sarahari." That one should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, leave oneself low on the straw in the street, one should be more tolerant in the tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, you should be ready to offer all respects to others. So, you know, that's the mood of the devotees. They just very humbly chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, try to purify themselves, you know, from these, you know, the dangerous condition of the enemies of the mind. Because even as devotees, if we don't remain a humble devotee, just humbly chanting Hare Krishna, we can get carried away and taken away by bad association and end up leaving the association of devotees. That can happen, unfortunately. There's in the Markandeya Rishi Purana, it's told of the effects here, similar to this, that the material body, which is compared to like a bag of pus, stool, urine, like that, in one sense, it can be considered a fortress. And our transcendental knowledge, which is coming, you know, through the spiritual master, that is the fortification that keeps our fortress of the body protected. Now, within this fortress, there are 9 gates. And there are 2 ministers. One is the mind and one is the intelligence. Now, these 2 ministers actually are always trying to get the upper hand on each other. The mind is always trying to win over and take control of the intelligence. You know, don't listen to the intelligence, listen to me. And the intelligence is trying to win over the mind, like, you do what I say, like this. So they're 2 ministers of the king. Now, on the outside of the fortress lives the 6 enemies. Lust, greed, and, you know. And what happens is that one of the enemies, attachment, makes the mind an ally. Right, that's how you enter in. And attachment, therefore the mind allows the attachment, one of the enemies, in to the fortress. And once attachment is in, we see in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, in the 2nd chapter, from attachment, then followed quickly behind his lust, greed, anger, it's like the Trojan horse, you know, it's filled with all. So once they're in, once the 6 enemies are in, with the mind as an ally, the intelligence has no power to, the intelligence is immediately overcome. He has no strength against all those 7 like that. And then the king, representing the spirit soul, he is immediately defeated. Which means that, you know, he has lost a material existence. His spiritual platform is completely, you know, covered up like this. So this is the danger. And Krishna is saying, this is not just for the non-devotees. He's saying that as a devotee, as a transcendentalist, you should be very, very cautious. Do not trust the mind and its 6 enemies. Because even as an elevated transcendentalist, they will actually enter and drag down and everything finished like that. So I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments. Any of these points yet?
When all these people come to the festivals and that, pretty much say they leave all that here as well, like all the places you bring from pilgrimage and that, it's still with stuff that people go and leave all that. So does that mean after you have a big festival, all the people come in, it's all sort of left here for the devotees?
The fire of knowledge burns up, you know, all impurities. So there's nothing remaining. If there's no fire of knowledge, then they will leave it here. The fire of knowledge, you know, burns up all the results of simple activity. If the devotees are not fixed in transcendental knowledge themselves, and that fire is not blazing within the temple, then yes, people can come and leave contamination to the point that gradually, you know, we can deviate from being a member, you know, a humble servant in the disciplic succession of Srila Prabhupada, to becoming, you know, a Hari Bol, or, you know, something watered down. Some devotees chant just the once, the Panchatattva Maha Mantra at the beginning. You know, they offer their prayers to the spiritual master, and then the Panchatattva Maha Mantra, and then they'll chant the whole 16 rounds. And some devotees may chant the Panchatattva Maha Mantra in between, you know. It's optional. But, you know, devotees roll out of bed. I was just remembering this morning, you know, thinking about this, that, you know, as brahmacharis, you know, the first thing we did, we were woken up, you rolled over and you paid your obeisances. First thing you did in the day. And the last thing you did in the day, you're next to your bed, you bow down, pay your obeisances, the spiritual master, Panchatattva, you know, Lord Sri Krishna, and then you go to bed. First thing you do in the day, and the last thing. And every time there's, you know, at every function, so in other words, if devotees have a function in the temple room, they'll offer their prayers first to Prabhupada, then the Panchatattva, then they'll do whatever function it is. When that function finishes and they go to another room of the temple, they again offer their prayers to Srila Prabhupada, Panchatattva Mama, and they do that. If they go to a home program, not that they think, I did the prayers to Prabhupada this morning, now I'm at a home program, or now it's the evening, you know, we did Guru Puja this morning, now there's 300 or 400 guests in the temple, we won't do the prayers to Prabhupada, it's not, we've already done that. You know. And again, it surprises me that devotees can somehow perceive the chanting, you know, vigorously, Radhi Radhi, and they can somehow perceive, you know, the supreme, you know, transcendental entity of Srimati Radharani. They can perceive her presence in the temple, but they can't perceive Srila Prabhupada's presence, and therefore not offer obeisances. You wonder if they are actually perceiving Srimati Radharani's presence, or whether, you know, Radharani has turned her back and they're perceiving the illusory Radharani. Any other questions or comments? What's that? Sorry, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.